Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Kabe.
I'm Lizzie.
And joining us today, special guest co-host, we have Mr. Garrison Davis. Sir, how are you?
Doing good.
Your hair looks luscious.
Wavy, and I'm apparently drinking Windex.
You guys, our listeners, he's drinking this, literally, it looks like Windex, a neon blue kind of transparent liquid, and it looks toxic. And he's just
laughing, and he looks really happy.
So I recommend that everyone at home drink Windex. I'm just kidding. We want to talk to Garrison's parents because looks really unhealthy.
We don't approve. We do not approve, no. Man.
No. Yeah, there's a lot of weird ingredients in this. All right, well, it's probably not great.
No, you should never drink anything that looks like Windex. As a GI doctor, that's what I say.
I'm literally drinking whiskey right now as I'm telling him to stop drinking that blue concoction. What are you drinking over there, Lizzie? What is that?
It's actually just a non-alcoholic beverage at this moment. It's lemonade type thing. It's like a freshly squeezed lemon with seltzer. It's like super healthy. That.
All right, Garrison, we're not role models is what I'm trying to tell you. Do as we say, not as we do. We're very grateful that you decided to join us today. We have a really cool guest coming up. We have a Dr. Chase Anderson, and he is a psychiatry fellow right now, a child psychiatry fellow. And we're going to talk to him about some LGBTQ issues. And we could dedicate multiple shows to this, but I figure we have to at least start scratching the proverbial surface. Before we do that, though, would you be willing to tell us, because you're what we call a youth.
Yeah.
You're a youth. Type person. And would you tell us your own coming out story? Would you talk about that a little bit? I think that might be useful before we go into our discussion with Dr. Anderson.
Yeah.
I'd also like to know how you identify yourself.
Let's see. I currently just call myself queer. I don't know. I've somewhere in between the bi, pan, gay, queer genre, but also including gender too. I usually describe my gender as whatever is useful in the moment. I don't really know. There's terms like agender and gender queer that are, I sometimes relate to. But it kind of changes. It kind of fluctuates. I don't consider myself cisgender, but it's very useful to go by he, him pronouns sometimes in the world. And sometimes it's useful to be more ambiguous, which I also enjoy. I like being androgynous. I like playing around with both gender, like presentation and just gender identity. I don't know. That's why I'm growing to like the term queer more and more because it's less defined. It's less kind of pinned down.
Yeah.
So you can be, queer in like sexual preference and sexuality, but also queer in gender.
Did you read about or watch or hear about the Kid Cudi performance on Saturday Night Live where this young black man, this rapper, kind of a hip hop, whatever, like label genres, we can argue about that, came out in a dress on stage, a really girly kind of 13-year-old or quinceañera type dress. And, you know, it's about kind of trying to stretch and defy gender roles. And I thought it was really interesting. And he really paid a lot of homage to Kurt Cobain. So did you see that or read about it?
No, I think I've blocked most SNL things on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because
you're going to watch Elon Musk though, right? I mean, you're going to watch the Musk, aren't you?
No, the discourse around SNL on Twitter has just gotten to be a little too much. I think I muted all those terms at this point.
Well, this is not Twitter. This is from having watched it.
So. But yeah, but like that sounds lovely. I'm all for that. I know they used to have a relatively transphobic sketch, I think called Pat. During the summer I would get like far right people sending me Pat screenshots being like, haha, this is you because you don't look necessarily super male or female. And I'm like, thanks, I guess. Mm. That's kind of what I'm going for. I first didn't know what Pat was. I had to like send it to group chats on Signal with all the journalists. I'm like, why are people sending me this image? They're like, oh, it's like this old SNL sketch about an androgynous person.
That's our era of SNL. Yeah. You can just talk to us about old stuff. Jesus Christ. I can't. Yeah. He was like at the same time as this really old movie. I think it was black and white called The Empire Strikes Back. It was really old. I don't know. That's us.
We know Pat Garrison. You don't need Pat. To give us context.
I had no idea what this was.
It was not funny. It was unfrozen caveman lawyer. It was no massive head wound Harry. Those are the ones you should Google. Those are hilarious. That was this running bit. It was lame. Anyways, tell us about your story because it might relate to what we talk about in a little bit here with Dr. Anderson.
Yeah. So like I grew up in a much more kind of Christian conservative environment in Canada. And in like when I was a preteen, my family moved away from that and we moved to Portland, where I've been ever since. I was homeschooled once I moved to Portland. So, you know, everything was very much bubbled. There was like a built-in whole community with like a school and the church and everything. So like, you know, all my schooling was classical conservative kind of stuff. So not super great opinions on LGBT issues.
Not incredibly informed. Sure, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sometimes, you know, quite openly hostile sometimes. You know, like the church I was at, you know, sent people to conversion therapy. Now, my parents were much more progressive and liberal than what they really let on. That's kind of part of why they moved away. But, you know, I wasn't super aware of that because we didn't really talk much about political stuff. So, you know, I was still kind of stuck in this kind of like weird place. When I was being homeschooled, there was like a Christian homeschool group that we would like meet up with once a week. And I started meeting some kids there that definitely were queer, whether they really knew it at that time or not. But you know, you could tell something's different about them.
How old were you at this point?
I was in like my very early teens. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, I just started to, you know, learn more about, you know, just being around other people who were different. And then, you know, as I'm maturing, realizing, oh no, maybe I also like things that are not, you know, considered normal and are not different. And that, you know, so kind of personal experience is really what pushed me into kind of moving away from that more regressive worldview. Yeah. And then, you know, that leads you to learn more about, you know, history, and, you know, moving into, you know, leftism and stuff. Even, you know, you going beyond just liberalism.
Wait, but you're saying that learning about social issues, learning about history, that unlocked something in you or opened you up to something?
Almost the opposite. Like you know, like I got to meet some people who were very different from the people I'd been around previously, you know, in like the very hyper conservative Christian environment, you know, once you're around a few people that are different, you're like, oh, this really kind of expands the possibilities of things. Mm. Not everything is this like specific bad stereotype. Not everything is, you know, as simple. So, you know, once that gets cracked, you start to, you know, think about yourself differently, like be like, oh, maybe I don't really like girls that much. And I actually am attracted to guys. And, you know, and that's and once that happens, you know, your whole world kind of breaks down and you're like, oh, if I was so wrong about this thing, what else am I like wrong about?
It
opens up the way you see the world around you, because you know everything. Yeah,
the chinking your armor was you went from one Christian Bible study group in Canada to a different Christian Bible study group in Portland, and your mind was blown.
Yeah, I mean, like you know, it was still a very conservative group, but
right,
you know,
I'm just like, maybe your parents put you in a special like group of like unique kids. Maybe your parents really have saw something in you that you didn't even know.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying to help me in those ways. You know, I've talked with them about this kind of stuff for the past few years, and they were definitely trying to lead me down a better path. But I was always so independent and in my room, like all the time, just as a kid, especially when I moved to Portland. But yeah, you know, meeting new people, kind of just expanding what you think you know about the world. Because you know, when you're like a 13-year-old, you think you're so smart. At least I did. Mm-hmm. And then you know, as if a few things can happen that kind of just like cracks everything open that you thought you knew about the world.
So when was the discussion with your parents, and was that stressful for you?
Yeah, so I think I came out to my parents around like 2017, 2018. This is like when I was like 16-ish, I think. I was definitely like nervous at first, because like I knew that, you know, we had this more conservative background, and I knew they were kind of, you know, not really that anymore, or not really that, you know, in the first place as much. But I still didn't know quite what was going on, because we didn't really talk about that kind of stuff. So I didn't really know what the reaction would be. The way I decided to come out, because I'm a nerd, is I bought a lightsaber pride shirt. So a pride shirt that's just like all different colors of lightsabers. Oh, yeah. And that's the way I decided to come out. And my parents didn't get it for a day. They just thought like, oh, they're like, oh, Garrison, that's a nice shirt. I'm like, oh, thanks. And then the day after, I like told them, so yeah, this is a pride shirt because I think I'm like bi or queer or something. And they're like, oh, that's cool. You know, even we talked about it. I forget what it was exactly like, but yeah, you know, they were very supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they were very happy that I was, you know, growing as a person and, they were happy for a lot of reasons.
Well, that sounds like it was probably the best possible outcome we could expect. I think we have Dr. Anderson coming up. He'll help us parse out what happens when the response isn't quite so positive.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we have Dr. Chase Anderson, the chief child psychiatrist fellow at UCSF. He has a focus on LGBTQ issues. Let's take a break for a moment. We'll come back, bring him on, chat some more with him and our young Mr. Garrison Davis. Everyone, stay tuned. So excited to have on our next guest. We have Dr. Chase Anderson. He is the rising chief of child psychiatry fellowship at UCSF. I hope I got that right. And has a focus on LGBTQ issues and what I think it sounds like also underrepresented minorities. And it's a real pleasure to have you on. I really enjoy following you online. You're a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, and feel free to call me Chase. I'm trying to flatten the hierarchy as much as possible.
Thank you for coming on the show. Can you tell our listeners, and Garrison doesn't have any medical background, and honestly, Kaveh and I don't think know that much about psychiatry, because it's really just a different beast, and we've both been in the field of medicine, specifically gastroenterology, for like over 10 years now, so we're pretty, I mean, there's a lot of overlap between psychiatry and GI, let's be honest, but mm-hmm. Far as a lot of the medications and kind of the updated DSM criteria, I wouldn't consider myself up to date. So can you tell us, like, how did you choose a field and what kind of training goes into that?
Yeah, excellent question. So I think I was always born to be a psychiatrist, to be honest. I think that really came to fruition when I was in undergraduate school. I had a lot of friends, and what we would do was stay up till dawn, just sharing our stories after we first met. So like the sun would be rising and the birds would be like really annoying, but we were just talking about our stories. So like our birth to like now and who we were and like our dreams and hopes and fears. And then I went to medical school and I was class president and went through depression and anxiety for the second time in my life, because of a lot of minority stress and things like that. But we had two classmates who passed away in my second year. So helping guide our class through that. And then in third year, where we do our clinical rotations, my psychiatry is my first rotation. My resident or the person who I was working with actually created space for somebody to open up about being gay, and his wife didn't know. And he also had HIV, which his wife knew about. His kids didn't know about most of it. And I got to see him open up and feel safe crying. And I think that just always stuck with me of, if you do things right, you can create a safe space for people to be themselves and really share who they are. And then I always knew I was going to do pediatrics because I want to go back to the origins of things. Like we get to, in adult residency, you see a lot of adults who, if somebody had had a child psychiatrist earlier, maybe they wouldn't have ended up in the emergency room. Maybe they wouldn't have the horrible things that are happening to them now. So I always wanted to go back to like, when kids are younger, can I create a safe space for them and an accepting adult who is there for them and maybe helps guide them through some of the things that are going on and helps to heal their families a little bit too. So that's what got me into psychiatry, was I think I always was meant to listen to people's stories. And then in training, I went through 4 years of medical school. So like went through all the rotations of surgery, internal medicine, neurology, psychiatry, things like that. And then I did adult residency training. So that's 3 extra years. It can be 4, but I left early to go start my child psychiatry fellowship at UCSF. So I'm now at UCSF in California. Well, actually I'm in Seattle because like I'm on vacation. And so it'll be either like 5 to 6 years total for the child psychiatry and adult residency training, depending on when you graduate.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Your peers in med school, the second years, was it suicide in the manner that they died?
Yeah. So actually one of the things that we never discussed it fully, because the family didn't want to share what had happened at home out of respect, we never asked. The first classmate passed away at the beginning of my second year, and she had melanoma that was in remission and then came back. She was a really wonderful person. Both of them were, and people I always keep in my heart, because they represented some of the best parts of our class in a lot of ways. For the second person, passed away at home. And so we never delved into it because I never felt like that was my role as class president. My role was just to provide a space of emotional support and safety for my other classmates as well.
Yeah.
We had to do like memorial services for both of them and things like that. So,
yeah.
As a child psychiatrist, you deal with a lot of mental health stuff relating to teens and adolescents, which there is that itself is, I assume to be quite a big deal to handle. Cause I mean, I'm 18. So it's, there's a lot of stuff going on in my head and other people's heads all the time. But what kind of stressors do you kind of see that are more specific to the LGBT community and like LGBT youth specifically?
Yeah. I love that question. I think it hits upon a big reason why I wanted to become a child psychiatrist, is a lot of kids go through this thing called minority stress. It's this thing that came into being was termed in 2003. And so a lot more people are talking about it now, but it's specific stressors for minoritized communities. It started out as for LGBTQ+ populations, but then expanded to other minoritized populations as everybody was like, oh, we're all experiencing these stressors. So it's specifically for a specific population. So like getting called the N-word, getting called an FAG, those kind of things are specific stressors that go to specific communities and then cause mental health outcomes. The way I try to describe it to people is, imagine getting a paper cut. You get one and it heals and it's annoying, but you're like, okay, it's gone. Imagine getting 1,000 paper cuts a day and you have no idea how you're bleeding everywhere. And then you're like, how do I heal? And so that's what minority stress is for a lot of people. And the other way I like to describe it is actually using a Sailor Moon reference, because I watch a lot of Sailor Moon in Japanese, so I had to bring that in.
People warned me that we were going to get the Sailor Moon, and I said, what is Sailor Moon?
I'm so excited.
What is Sailor Moon?
So
Wait, you guys don't know what Sailor Moon is?
Are they old, like Pat from Saturday Night Live?
Exactly.
It's a 90s like cartoon. It's an anime. It used to be a manga. So it was drawn like in Japan, and then they made it into a Japanese like anime, so like a TV show, and it caught on, and then they did an English version, and the dubbing is like, you know, it's dubbing.
It's dubbing.
We'll just say it's dubbing. And then they rebooted it recently.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they rebooted it, and then like...
Justine, I'm deleting all of this. I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
I'm trying to show Lizzie a picture of what Sailor Moon is. Can you see that, Lizzie?
So cute. Yep.
I know what anime is.
Anime. Did you call it Japanime?
Anime. Which, by the way, is adorable, I think. I think I'm adorable.
Afghanistan animation? No, this is
Japanime. That's like my niece. Instead of hand sanitizer, she calls it hanitizer. I'm like, this is genius.
I know Sailor Moon was very important for all of like the generation of queers older than me. Mm-hmm. I grew up in like the age of
you.
Yeah, you know, like one generation older than
Chase.
Me.
Chase is 18.
Yeah, he's describing me right now.
Chase,
welcome to our world.
Like,
am I old now?
Yes, yeah, you are old.
Yeah, that's what's happening. Maroon. You're turning old.
If you're not a Zoomer, you're old. Because my Sailor Moon was Steven Universe, and like a lot of queer teens my age, like that was the thing that helped us kind of. I mean, like, you know, Steven Universe like helped me, like come to accepting like my own queerness in like a lot of ways. Like watching that show as 13, 14, 15 years old.
So explain to me how Sailor Moon or Steven whatever, what does that mean for queer people? Like, how does that open doors or make you feel accepted? Because I have literally no frame of reference, so I'm not sure how that does it for you. Are there gay characters? Are there queer characters? Are there just androgynous characters? Like, what is it?
Yeah, Sailor Moon, Garrison, like Sailor Moon had gay characters. That's why I like the Japanese version better. Is they actually like had a?
They actually got the kissing inside. They had to cut it for the English. Yeah,
yeah,
because English was not as good. I liken it to also Charmed and also Buffy and things like that. Like a lot of gay men resonate with like women who find like their powers and things like that, but also have to adapt into everyday society. So it's almost like you have dual roles.
Yeah.
And it helps you like be yourself, and you're like, I am powerful too.
I totally get it. It makes sense. You know why I get it? Because I had X-Men growing up. And X-Men
is also a gay thing.
X-Men also gay, but also racial stuff there too. Mm-hmm. For me, being like a Middle Eastern guy growing up in the 80s, there wasn't any like real Middle Eastern characters to look up to. The closest thing you had was something like the X-Men, where you're like, okay, here's this group of people who are kind of disliked for no particular reason other than some other people in their group did something bad. You know, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, for example, in that situation. So I totally understood the X-Men. It was the closest thing I had. So I could see where you're talking about with this.
And I have no idea what you're talking about, but I love Buffy.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. I do.
Everyone loves Buffy.
Yeah. First of all, I don't know that that's true. I love Buffy, but I do. I think the concept of trying to be two people at once and trying to reconcile that is a great way to describe how gay people or like, you know, gay people of color, I mean, trying to be macho and also be yourself and try to figure out how to do that when maybe you don't want to do anything really. So.
Yeah. All right. Let me change gears a little bit to talk about trans issues because there are what I feel a whole new set of stressors to trans youth Yeah, that's really been pushed recently. We'll talk about why that might be in a second. But so far in 2021, state legislators in over 30 states have introduced about 100 different bills legislating the bodies and choices of transgender youth, targeting really what sounds like kids in their healthcare, access to healthcare, and sports as well. Arkansas was the first bill, the first to pass a bill like that. And then, you know, Texas Senate on Tuesday passed something on an 18-12 vote that would classify providing gender-affirming healthcare to trans minors as child abuse. So this is all in this new setting. There's been a lot of push for this. And they're going to argue that they want to stop experimental, quote unquote, experimental treatments on kids. And they, you know, object to children using puberty suppression treatment or hormones or even surgery for the purpose of gender transitioning. It's unclear if these are going to pass. I mean, it, for Texas, for example, there was a bill that passed prior and stalled in the House. I imagine this next one will as well. The public outcry against this has been pretty severe. But let me just start by asking, there's a lot of questions here. I want to know what new stress this is, but what, if any, evidence do you know of are they using for this? Is there any evidence that these things that are being, that we're doing, these medical treatments are harmful to kids?
No.
That's it. And we're going to end the podcast right now.
Yeah, okay. Like, we're done. Like,
good night, everyone. See you later. Yeah. No, that is exactly what I assume the answer is. But where are these legislators pointing to? What are they pointing to? Is there any evidence that's come out in the past that's been debunked, or is there anything that they are pointing to?
Yeah, I think some of them are pointing to the fact that some people who do transition, about 4%, which is drastically low, will later detransition, and that is a process. I think that they're forgetting how damaging it is to have to go through puberty for a lot of people. And they don't, that's not their aim, is to actually really care about the children right now. Let's put that out there. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that they point to is saying that, oh, puberty blockers haven't been used in kids who are transitioning. They've been used for kids with precocious puberty or who have early onset puberty, and they're extremely right. safe. And it's just a pause. It's a pause that gives kids time and families time to really figure out, where do we want to go from here? Who am I? How do I want to transition? Do I want to medically transition and surgically transition, or just medically transition? It's just a pause. And what we're seeing is a lot of people using their bigotry and saying it's for kids, to be honest.
It's just, you know, what I read recently is that the puberty blockers have been around for a long time, and there's data, I think, of using it up to 10 years with no consequence, no objective data that shows a negative outcome. So, you know, I've heard testimony and hearing these trans kids say, like, I don't need to argue or tell you guys all my suicide attempts or my trauma. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you how happy transitioning has been for me. You know, it's just, it's moving. It may, you know, every time I listen to one of them, I'm like, I start crying. It's like, it's so moving to hear it, you know. It's so sad that
They really shouldn't have to do that. It's frustrating.
Like, right. I mean, there was abortion, then the next crusade was gay marriage, and now this is like it's a political crusade. So how do we argue, I guess, Chase, I don't know if you have anything in your pocket. How do we argue the science? Like, and how do we translate that into legislation? Like, how do you win the argument of, like, you know, we're scared and we don't, you know, the conservatives are just scared and they don't want to feel like, quote unquote, society's getting out of control and being unpredictable when they're just uncomfortable. Like, how do you win the argument when it's just, they don't like it, they don't like these people, they don't like the whole thing?
I think that is the crux of what's happening in America. We're seeing a lot of fear and we're seeing a lot of anger, and I think the thing that I've seen help the most is there are a lot of people who do science work, and I love that. I think it's, how do we relay that to the public? And also, how do we let trans people and trans individuals and trans children share their stories? Because I think it's the stories that, I mean, this is why I'm a psychiatrist. I think it's the stories that really capture people. That's why I write about my own mental health, just to normalize these things. Like, these are things that people go through. Kids shouldn't have to do that, But I have seen the power of like us uplifting trans voices. I've seen people change their viewpoints because of that. But the other thing that we had to need to add as a caveat is, at a certain point, you have to just let these people go. Like certain hateful people and bigoted people, like some people we will not be able to change. And like, I'm sorry, but no amount of facts is going to get to them, no amount of stories. And so how do we work around them? How do we get people in government who actually listen and actually care about other people? How do we do grassroots efforts? How do we protect trans people so they can get through these moments too?
Yeah. Their arguments are like, these kids are being reckless, when it's like the kids and their parents and their primary care doctor, and maybe you can speak to this, and a psychiatrist and a social worker and an endocrinologist.
Science.
It's a team of people working together who are making this decision to literally transition. It's an important word, right? It's not just like, I'm going to go chop off my penis tomorrow. It's, you know, it's not as whimsical and it's reckless.
It takes so long.
It's like, years sometimes.
Most of my friends are trans. I mean, I've talked to my therapist about getting on estrogen. I may do that eventually. We'll see. But like a lot of the fear from a lot of these kids and their parents is the fear from, you know, their parents and just you know, fear of the press in general. Just, it's so long and daunting. Like people, all the commentators on the right and politicians talk about it's this instant thing, you know. It can be so depressingly long of a process to get stuff started, and just like so overwhelming. It's absurd, and how some of these states' laws are like just like contradicting the medical consent age in all these states. It's like there's so much ridiculous bullshit going on that's. Rage is the only kind of emotion I can deal with it right now, because it's just there's so much of it all the time.
Chase, we brought you on to help deal
with the rage. Right. We don't want to hear
a free session right now.
This is a free session. Sorry, man.
Right. Sorry. We're not asking you about your experience, your medical professional opinion. We just wanted you to treat
our buddy here.
We're here to help out.
let me ask a question. What, this is probably obvious, but why is this happening now? This is not new. All this stuff, as Garrison said, has been science for a long time. This has been stuff we've been doing for a long time. People have been doing this for a long time. Why all of a sudden is there this massive push right now to in all these states? I have to feel there's politics behind this. I don't know what else it could be.
Yeah. So if you look back through history, until people's rights are enshrined by law, by the Supreme Court, they are vulnerable. And even then, people still go after them in different ways. We've seen this with Black Americans. We've seen this with LGBT like Americans. We've seen it across every minoritized group. And so taking a step back, look at the group that is the most vulnerable right now. It's trans individuals, because their rights are not enshrined by law. And so politically, who do you go after to build your base and to basically whip up hatred?
Right.
I have a question about that. Then who's next? Like I said, we did, they're like anti-women by putting, trying to fight abortion, I think is we can agree is very, is misogynist. Mm-hmm. The anti-gay marriage crusade, clearly trans are an easy target right now, because it's challenging. I have trans patients, and it's, you know, it's not that easy when you see male on the chart and the patient identifies as female. It's, you know, you want to be kind and compassionate, and sometimes you say the wrong thing and then you feel like shit. It's a bit of a mind fuck sometimes, to be honest, like trying to just be kind, to try to be kind and not feel embarrassed that you're doing the wrong thing. Who's the next? Who's the next minority? Like, who are we going to pick on next?
I mean, we're already going after voting rights, and that's against every minoritized person, because we voted in large numbers. So I think, honestly, what I hope happens, and I think all of you know that I'm kind of an idealist, is like, eventually we just let go of this kind of stuff. And when a new group comes along or a new like idea comes along, we're just like, oh, let's hear more about this, instead of let's hate this first and then have to like work against that.
A lot of this plays into like a lot of old-timey politics, actually, because like the group that's behind the anti-trans bills in more than 20 states that have been introduced this past year is the Alliance Defending Freedom, which has been designated an LGBT hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. They've done a lot of anti-gay stuff in the past few decades. You know, their whole bit is that like homosexuals are going to destroy Christianity. So like that's like their whole bit. You know, and like this year they have really turned they've turned up the notch on the anti-trans stuff. You know, and a lot of their thing is, you know, about protecting, you know, the natural family, quote unquote. That's like their big thing. So, you know, if we're looking for future targets, this could be stuff, you know, more like sex workers. It could be stuff like, you know, like non-monogamous relationships, you know. And then, you know, all these things are, you know, when you add on another minority, like if you're a black person or person of color, this just gets the dial turned up on like everything, right? So, you know, you can watch groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom and other kind of similar groups who really focus on putting legislation into states and seeing, you know, what their ideology is, how they're, you know, for this instance, you know, rooted in like this deep, you know, misunderstanding of biblical theology that's really, you know, just to advance their kind of, you know, bigoted agenda and talking about, yeah, what other kind of possible targets will they come up with, you know, as the world's kind of changing, what kind of new things will become accepted, and then, you know, groups like this are going to find ways to attack them. And, you know, and trans issues are like the one thing right now, you know, because like they kind of lost the battle on the homosexuals.
Yeah.
So trans is like the next thing they want to do.
You're exactly right. You mentioned it too, Chase. You said that like this is done to whip up the base, give them something to fight for. And this is kind of an easy low hanging fruit for them to fight the way they spin it. Because if someone just comes at you and says, hey, do you think we should be letting men into the women's bathroom? Do you think we should be letting kids decide if they're going to become a different sex when they're four? You know, they throw out this red meat that people will eat up.
And it's wrong.
I know it's wrong. Can you explain what misconceptions there are about trans health that are fueling this? And can we dispel a couple of them? I know there's more than we can count.
There's like a multitude. We could have episodes on episodes. I think one of the big things that comes up is, and this happened with gay people as well, kids don't know. Kids actually know from a very early age their sexual orientation, as well as like one of the big things is actually some LGBT people, they've done studies on this, actually know their sexual orientation earlier than straight like people do. And that we actually have a sense of self that comes about pretty early. That's one of the things that comes up in a lot of cases, is basically saying things along those lines. There's also saying like with puberty blockers, saying like, oh, it has like all these negative consequences. The ones that I like remember off the top of my head are sometimes there is lower bone density, but you give vitamin D and calcium, like you can fix that. And also sometimes people are a little bit taller depending on like which way they're transitioning and things like that. And because your growth plate closes a little bit later, and sometimes you get a headache, like, okay, those things happen, but these things are safe. So there's also that. I think the other thing is that it's just people say, as Garrison really aptly put it, this is destroying families. Who are you to say what a family looks like?
Right.
A lot of people who are LGBT, we build our families because of like this issue of not being accepted by people who are bigoted. So we build our families, and just because your family looks one way doesn't mean it's the right way. It doesn't mean that it's set in stone. And also thinking about just like families come in wholly different ways. Like we have the Gay Med Twitter family on Twitter. That's a family. Like a family is somebody who supports you and is with you and also challenges you to be a better person.
Yeah. I mean, that's very well said. Thank you. I think the Supreme Court will be hearing cases on foster care families, I think, because I think there's Christian churches that support foster care programs, and they are saying they don't want gay people to support them. So that's the next battle, which, you know, it's so sad, right? Like if someone wants to help a kid, like let them help a kid. But you really stated very well, I think, what the very few pretty minor negative consequences are. I mean, I don't want to be any shorter, so maybe that's a real consequence, but You know, I'm totally happy with my height, but those are meaningful. But those are the negative consequences. So can you speak to the data and any outcome numbers for the positives? So I think clearly suicide, it would be maybe the number that's the most striking. So if you could share that with us.
Of course. So there's a new study that came out that actually shows that not only do people have decreased suicidality in terms of if you help them with transitioning, but also another thing that we always need to think about is LGBTQ plus Americans have higher rates of substance use, like astronomically so.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and what was taught in medicine sometimes, and still is in some ways, is the thinking that people who are minoritized or people who are LGBTQ plus are experiencing higher rates of substance use because of genetic factors. Genetics in some ways do predispose people, and epigenetics and things like that. I can break that down if we need to. But what they're looking at now is that minority stress in and of itself leads to higher rates of substance use. So because somebody is being told every day, like being called the N-word, being called like blah, 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 what happens is that you use substances as coping because they don't have people who are around them who support them. So they have to figure out a way through in that meantime. So not only does suicidality decrease, but also substance use will decrease if we are just using the proper pronouns for a person. The other thing is that it decreases mental health like issues overall. So not only depression and suicidality, like suicidality, people hear that and they're like, ooh, that's a huge thing, which it is, but also we decrease anxiety. We decrease other like mental health issues as well. You just make the person feel accepting a person makes them better, like just in general. And I think the other thing I want to point out is all of these people who are going after trans people, going after minoritized people, we're not bothering you. Why do you need to bother us? We have other things to be doing.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well said. Well said. Okay. Man, there's so many more questions I have. I have a whole list of questions about the sports issue, but I don't think we have enough time for that because I don't think there's anything in this I want to cut.
All right. So let people play sports. Also,
let people play sports.
It's just an argument. Especially it's just a right-wing kids. Argument. Yeah.
And the other kids don't care.
Yeah.
Like, the other kids are like, I just want to play soccer. Like,
right.
Calm down. It's fine.
I don't get the sense that anyone cares about this. I just don't. And actually, I mean, nobody talks about the fact that because everyone's always focused on the testosterone levels. Like testosterone automatically makes you a better athlete. I mean, I don't know if there's any proof to that. And if there was, I mean, you can have fluctuating levels of testosterone in young women, right? You can have women with, you know, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and they can have higher levels of testosterone. I don't know if there's any evidence that makes them greater athletes than anyone else. All right. Well, we'll have to talk about that later.
We'll have an endocrinologist on to help us actually answer these questions. I think it's just a way in for the conservatives to be like anti-trans, like, because you know it's not fair for our women. So if you make
your daughter plays soccer, your daughter's gonna lose the games now. That's what they're doing, right? They're just like they're trying to find some way to get to people.
It's just a bad way in.
All right. Let's do some listener questions because I did put out a couple listener questions. Let's see if there's anything here for us. This one comes from Dobby, the street guitarist on Twitter, who, by the way, he's a great musician at Dobby's_music. If you ask him to do a cover song for you, he will do it for you. It's great. He makes a whole YouTube. It's great. Anyways, check him out. So he asks, are there any widely held misconceptions about the treatment of LGBTQ people, like the horrible one about the degree to which Black people can feel pain? I do realize the enormity of this particular can of worms as I type. So we talked about maybe a little bit regarding the misconceptions, but is there anything else that comes to mind when it comes to misconceptions about treating LGBTQ people?
Yes. First, I also want to ask if Dobby is a free elf right now. Like
he is a free elf. Okay. You'll see videos of him just playing guitar on the streets.
Okay. All right, so he's a free
elf.
I think so. We've talked about this a little bit, but I think one of the other misconceptions, or one of the things that can happen, especially in mental health, is a lot of LGBTQ plus Americans are diagnosed with personality disorders when they come in, like, for psychiatric reasons. So they aren't diagnosed with depression. They aren't diagnosed with anxiety. They're diagnosed with personality disorders like borderline personality disorder, or borderline personality structuring, or like narcissistic personality disorder. So to take a step back, personality structuring or personality disorders are ways in which somebody, because of how they were brought up or a trauma they've experienced, will react in certain ways. And that's to keep themselves safe. That personality structuring really helped them when they were younger and actually was a benefit to them. But as they get older, sometimes it's not as much of a benefit. So we help to like create a little bit more flexibility and to help them tolerate the distress that can occur in real life. Because a lot of the times they feel like everything's at a 10 when it might be at a 5. And that's just because of experiences they've gone through. So we need to have more compassion around that in general. But when a lot of LGBTQ plus Americans come in for psychiatric reasons, they are diagnosed with these personality disorders. And that's because we don't think about, people see them and make assumptions. Physicians do that. Psychiatrists do that. In the DSM, so that's our diagnostic like criteria manual, being gay was seen as basically a disorder, a mental health illness for years and years and years. That changed recently. So people are coming in with implicit biases around LGBTQ mental health and what an LGBTQ person is going through. So those personality disorders are overdiagnosed for those people when they're actually probably experiencing minority stress or like PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder instead.
And what you mentioned earlier, maybe that there's a lot of substance abuse. So people will dismiss maybe some of their other concerns by saying, oh, well, you're just using crack. You don't really have gender dysphoria or anything else because of that. So
here's another question from Zach Radcliffe at Zach Radcliffe PhD. What words of advice do you have for closeted students or trainees as they navigate going to pre-med, med school, and beyond?
Yeah. I think that one's, first of all, to anybody who is closeted right now, we will all try to create a safer space for you to be out. That's what we're trying to do on Twitter. And like, I think a lot of people are trying to do that in medicine. I think the first thing is find your community, which is hard, but like, that's why people have anonymous Twitter accounts. And there are people who are anonymous on Twitter and like come out to me like through DMs and things like that. And that's always a gift. And it gives me an opportunity to be like, hey, we still have work to do because this person doesn't feel safe. I think words of advice are, first, find your community. The other thing is take your time. It's a process. Sometimes people feel like they're forced to come out or they're outed, and that's really dangerous. And so we want to take a step back and like make sure that person feels safe to come out and recognize that it's a journey for them and let them have that journey while also creating a safe space for them. The other thing is, even if you're not out, try to find mentors who are. And that won't out you necessarily, but if the person does find out and they're a trusted mentor, then you have somebody to talk to. I think that's the fourth thing, is find somebody to talk to about this, because it's hard. It's really hard to go through medicine in general. Like, the medical culture needs a drastic shift.
Yeah.
But if you're closeted and gay or LGBTQ plus or different in some way, you need to find support some kind of way. So like, that's why I mentioned Twitter first, because it's a, like, we're trying to create a positive community right now.
Some people are. Thank you for that.
I've been on Twitter. I don't know.
I'm like, Chase, totally that positive. Is the nicest, most overly kind statement I think we've ever made on this.
Some people need to shape up, but like, a lot of people are trying.
No, well, thank you. Thank you for all you're doing on that.
Yeah, man, you are a ray of sunshine on Twitter and on this podcast. Thank you so much for coming on, both of you guys. Garrison, it is always so much fun to have you on. I hope you decide to let us harass you some more on the show. We have a good time when you come on, and you have a lot to add. Can you tell people where to find you?
I'm on Twitter at HungryBowtie for reporting and also more cat pictures now. So a mix of reporting on like far right stuff and protests, and then, you know, pictures of me in a poncho holding a cat. And also I appear semi-regularly on Behind the Bastards. You can listen to that. I also have a podcast series about the Portland protests called Uprising, A Guide from Portland. And I'll be working on more and more podcasts this next year. So stay tuned.
Yes, definitely keep us updated on what happens with you and all these podcast appearances. Listen to Behind the Bastards. Check out my appearance recently on Behind the Bastards. It's an amazing show, and that's where we found Garrison too. So we can't emphasize that show enough. I mean, if you're going to have to choose between our show and their show, you should choose their show. But if you're going to listen to two shows, you should listen to both of our shows, is what I'm trying to say.
Cool.
Thank you, Garrison. Dr. Chase Anderson, where can people find you?
So I'm on Twitter at Chase TM Anderson. And then I'm also on Instagram, and that's at Aries T Muses Dream Cooper. Don't ask. It was like, I created it when I was going through like applying for residency. I was like, don't find me. And then, yeah, those are the two places to find me.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. Thank you to Nadim, our producer, for helping us get these out there. Follow us at Twitter at the House of Pod. That includes you, Garrison. You don't follow us on Twitter. Don't think I don't notice that.
I
notice
don't?
That. He doesn't follow Saturday Night Live.
You do not. If you have questions about quote-unquote old stuff in the future, you can look to us, and I will answer those questions. Anyways, thank you guys so much. It was a real pleasure having you both on.
Thank you.
There, I followed you on Twitter. Hope you're happy.
Woohoo! I'll take a pity follow.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah, we're both chiefs.
Chief elect.
To two chiefs, so we chief know elect. What we're talking about, chief okay?
Elect. Yeah.
Garrison, chiefs are basically when you're super cool and everyone in your class likes you, basically.
No,
as you
see, no you're not cool. You. You're a big nerd.
Yeah,
big
I've nerd.
I do a lot of work.
I didn't know there was like this hierarchy.
There's a hierarchy, yeah.
Ooh. Garrison, here's a lesson for life. There's a hierarchy in everything.
I know, that's why I'm an anarchist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.